the Gear 6 Analyst Spotlight, interviews with industry analysts and experts discussing trends and issues in data center performance. Today's guests are John Webster, Senior Analyst and Founder of the Data Mobility Group, and William Hurley, Senior Analyst with the Data Mobility Group. Your host for the program is Gary Orenstein, Vice President of Marketing at Gear 6. Gary, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, John, William, thanks very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, I'm glad you could make it on the phone, William. John, I'd like to focus first on this new TAP framework that Data Mobility Group has put together and wanted to ask if you could give us a brief outline of the framework.
Yeah, well, TAP acronym, T stands for transient, A stands for archival, P stands for production. Basically, what we're trying to do is introduce to the IT community the concept that there might actually be three different types of data that they might want to consider as they're architecting systems, particularly storage systems, going forward. You know, the P, the production data, everybody's pretty familiar with. I mean, that's the, you know, the day-to-day, bet your business, run your business kinds of both structured and unstructured data that everybody's familiar with. I think everybody's also now familiar with archival data that's no longer in production, but data that has to be stored for compliance, legal, et cetera reasons, or maybe even just because you just don't want to throw it away. You want to keep it.
Right.
People, you know, people in IT tend to be sort of pack rats about things.
Nobody wants to throw anything away.
Right. It's the transient part that I think is new and just actually starting to appear on the horizon. And that comes from, you know, from things like RFID, GPS, sort of the pervasive wireless world that we now find ourselves in, whether we like it or not, in a way.
Sure. So is that really one of the key trends that brought about the framework, or what would you say the issues that have changed that are leading you to classify the industry this way?
Well, yeah, there was a guy named Chris DeCoutis, and I wrote a book called Inescapable Data, Harnessing the Power of Convergence, and it was really about what, you know, what happens when you start to converge the wireless world with the networked world, wired world as we know it, and the impact is that you've got all these pervasive data sources now available to you in IT that you can use to leverage developing and producing for your users new kinds of information. So an example would be use of RFID in the retail space, which a lot of people, retailers, are starting to experiment with now. The data that's produced by RFID devices in a retail space is valuable to you for a period of time, probably mostly in real time, and then the value of that data starts to degrade over time. If you capture it, you can't use it. It becomes, in a way, almost archival data very quickly. But if you can use it quickly, you can generate, you know, new types of information that you can beam to customers, for example, through a tablet. You can beam new kinds of information to store floor managers to keep inventory up. There are lots of different things that you can do with it, but you really need to leverage it as much as possible in real time. And that's one of the things that we examine in the book, and we also examine the impact to systems of that transient data.
So with all of this this great amount of information, it sounds to me like one of the secrets to handling this well is determining what to keep and what not to keep, and where do you keep it and how long. What in your mind are some of the things that the data storage manager, the data center manager, needs to think about in terms of how to pay attention and classify to these categories?
Well, I think it becomes, you know, sort of incumbent on systems to be able to produce information to, or let's say data to systems that help make this transient data make sense. And so let me talk about that via an example for a minute. There is a project going on at Mass General Hospital where drug carts are RFID enabled, such that little drug vials all have little RFID tags, and the drug carts themselves are RFID enabled so that they quote-unquote, know what's on each one of the carts, and they're also GPS-enabled, so a system can tell not only where the cart is physically in the hospital, but also what is on it, so that if a drug cart enters a patient's room that contains a drug that a patient is sensitive to or potentially allergic to, the system can notify a nursing station, for example, that a potential risk exists, and that's probably a good idea to do something about that.
Yeah, and I mean, having this happen all instantaneously is no easy feat.
Exactly. So what you need is you need a system that can collect that sort of transient data, the data that's coming into the system and changing all the time, and then combine that potentially with either or both production and archival data, and that's the data about patient that's in the room. The data about the patient sensitivity comes potentially even from an archival record if it's an emergency room situation. The system hasn't seen this patient for maybe 2 or 3 years. And that, even the archival data in that case, has to be accessible fairly quickly.
Right. So really getting at the time-sensitive nature of the data, including both, you know, when the data was actually captured, but then being able to get back to it quickly.
Yes, exactly. You know, we think of it as contextual data. In other words, you've got all this what we call transient data floating around, but it sort of doesn't mean anything until you put it in some contextual setting. And the way that you define the contextual setting from a data standpoint is either through the use of production data or archival data, and probably a combination of both.
Yeah, it's all, there's a lot of mobility in the theme here. Is that why your firm is called the Data Mobility Group?
But you know, a lot of immediacy too, though, I think. I mean, my sense is that CIOs are trying to move in a direction of more real time as they develop new applications for their user community.
Yeah. William, I'd like to shift to you a little bit and talk a little bit about the information time objectives and information point objectives, which are referred to as part of the framework here. How does this match or differ with some of the terms that users might be more familiar with, IT folks, in terms of recovery point objectives and recovering time objectives? And how does that fit into the framework?
No, Gary, I think that's a great question and an excellent way to kind of consider information point and information time objectives in a solid sense. Your recovery point and recovery time objectives really are an IT-driven, operationally oriented consideration for availability, system resilience, and system uptime. You know, it can pertain to backup or data replication, or even can be partly used to define application uptime or availability requirements. Information point and information time objectives are a little bit different in that clearly the need to have a time to recover, time to access information, as John described, in you know, contextualizing specific information, you know, taking those bits that are coming in from wireless or mobile or RFID-based applications and contextualizing them with the proper access to production and or archival information data sets, kind of really does begin to give you that sense of context. Clearly, different applications, such as the one John described regarding Mass General Hospital, the information time objective is going to be very significant, particularly where you do have patients that could be exposed to medications that could complicate their recovery process or even in the emergency room environment where decisions need to be made in very rapid with clearly a high degree of consideration for the patient's life. So those are the general ideas around information point and information time objectives, beginning to think about how to distinguish context on a function-by-function basis.
Right. So it's getting back to, I think, some of what we mentioned earlier is really understanding what this information is that's coming in, how do you capture it, and then how do you get back to it at the right time.
That's right.
There might be also another dimension here a little bit in the information point objective, and that is trying to figure out, you know, how much contextual data do you actually need? You may not need all that much. You may need a lot, and that's going to have an impact on system performance, sort of information time objective as well.
Right. I understand the transient data moving around the system in real time, being collected and then redistributed. How do you relate this transient data to the contextual data?
One of the ways that you know, people are doing this now is through database and memory systems. William, maybe you can talk about that in a little bit more detail.
We certainly are beginning to see more and more of it, not just through the various acquisitions being made by certain vendors, but also in the way that databases and new technologies are grabbing information in flight, and then through either an integrated process or through an extended suite of applications, really blending that with standing information. Some of those things can be correlating stock trades or ticker information and correlating that in real time against a broker trader's P&L. And they can look at, on a trading basis, are they in balance or out of balance on a trade-by-trade basis.
In that case, the transient data would be the ticker coming in real time. And the contextual data would be what part would complement that?
The contextual data would be the standing of the account, the portfolio, and the elements of the portfolio, even the profit and loss statement on a moment by moment basis. A lot of that information would be in the production environment and somewhat near real time. And other archival information may be pulling up old financial records or reports from a given company that's under consideration for a trade, old S-1s, old 10-Ks or 10-Qs, you know, other information that a trader is going to have to go back and look at, again, with a certain amount of expediency to access to really then draw in all elements of how to go about executing that trade. And then allowing the system to do its magic, letting you make the trade or prohibiting you from making the trade because it violates a certain rule or parameter.
Gotcha. So that's great. In the presentation, there was a statement on new IT value creation will be dependent upon the ability for companies to deliver real-time information. And we've heard an example from John on healthcare, and now William has given us this example in stock training. Are there other examples or industries where you see this applying and where customers really are going to have to take note of how these changes are taking shape?
We're seeing automakers use RFID in real time assembly line, such that you can create assembly lines out of a vacant building space, bring equipment in, traffic of it via RFID and GPS, and just assemble automobiles at particular points along the floor by bringing parts to it, as opposed to, moving the car as it's manufactured along the assembly line. Hummers are made that way, for example. We're seeing a lot of use of it in supply chain management. We're seeing a lot of use of these kinds of technologies in agriculture, where high-tech farming, if you will, where you've got machines out in the field that can operate at night, know exactly where they are, field, know the soil moisture content, are aware of yesterday's weather, tomorrow's weather.
That's an area where you don't necessarily think of the back end playing such an influential role, but it really does.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So lots of different industries. And entertainment, certain kinds of entertainment, particularly the gaming industry, is all over these kinds of technologies.
Yeah, and I just saw a news piece about that today. The presentation also includes a bit about storage virtualization. Sometimes that word can be a can of worms because it means so many different things. But you go on to expand that storage virtualization and the engine there will power a number of storage services platforms, which I think is really helpful. First, could you expand on the definition of storage virtualization as you see it, and then more specifically, talk about how that will power the various storage services, whether that be tiered storage, data mobility, infrastructure and application awareness, things like data access and data acceleration?
The word virtualization really equates to abstraction. And it creates a physical abstraction layer such that you have physical devices that are presented to an operating system as a logical device. Let's say that you have logical things that are presented to an an operating system as physical, but they really aren't in a way. And so an administrator to create a number of different kinds of services based on using that abstraction layer. And by services, I mean things like adding capacity seamlessly without disruption, being able to move data around within the storage environment in an automated way, again, without disrupting applications. As a matter of fact, the goal would be to optimize application performance while at the same time you're making the storage environment more efficient. Data protection is another service that could be offered, if you will, via virtualization.
In terms of virtualization, Gary, I mean, their abstraction clearly is a key element associated to the TAP framework. We believe that over time, and I think the trends are very solid here, that the applications that are service-oriented will be the course du jour. It'll be almost impossible not to implement an application that is service-aware, service-ready. And in those circumstances, the complexities of applications intercommunicating with each other will be handled by web services standards. Those activities are moving along fairly briskly today. Where there's a lag is data accessibility. Mm-hmm. And virtualization can be a critical and necessary component to not only ease the burden of putting in service-oriented applications, but also making them work effectively. More data in memory, more data accessed from a variety of points, as we've described with the TAP model. And as John has outlined, there are a variety of vehicles that can benefit today's traditional storage operational environment, from database management to data protection techniques to a variety of near or global reach data access vehicles for either structured or unstructured data.
Excellent. So that's a great way to lead to the final question, which I'd like to address to you, William. For IT and storage managers who are thinking about the data center architectures for the rest of 2006 and into 2007 and keeping some of the key elements of your TAP framework in place, what should they be thinking about on their planning horizons in terms of what they need to be aware of and what things are going to be changing over the next year or so?
That's a great question. There's so many things in motion right now. On one level, we are firm believers in the overwhelming increase in the adoption of standards-based technology at the server and host side. We think that will also impact significantly different storage protocols that will be implemented, particularly iSCSI. The big consideration, in thinking through where these three different types of data placement considerations need to be thought out are, on one hand, understanding how data can be expressed in the abstract. XML is clearly a major vehicle to be able to do that, and certain technologies are really enhancing that, and some vendors are taking the lead on that, two very significant and major vendors today. I also say that that type of expression, that type of abstraction of data, really does need to be, as John said, kind of considered as a central activity, maybe considered as a layer, maybe considered as the key function of a core enabling technology. But I would caution data center architects from trying to abstract in too many places all at once, at an array, at an archival system, at a file server, at a NAS box, at an intermediary point. The risks of data corruption, confused data access, and ultimately the number of pathway devices and elements becomes far too complex. We believe that moving kind of these data abstraction expressions, whether it's XML or some other vehicle, into a more centralized vehicle can really not only help the operational function of storage management, but really align with the long-term objectives of adding value, not just to the application environment, but to the business, because data will be accessible, the job will be easier, and storage operators and skilled professionals will be able to spend their time applying their creative understanding of the infrastructure to value-enhancing and revenue-generating activities, as opposed to playing catch-up with tapes or finding old files.
Well, that's a tall order, but excellent advice. So thank you for that, William. And John, thanks for joining us. today to talk a little bit more about the TAP framework and the new storage services. We'll be watching the research. Today's program will be podcast, and for downloads of the Data Mobility Group presentation on the TAP framework, please visit gear6.com and our company blog ThoughtPut. For Gear 6, I'm Gary Orenstein. Thanks for joining us.